Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. In the previous decade, LGBTQ individuals gained significant rights in the United States as the Supreme Court ruled that states could not ban same-sex marriage in 2015. You all know that. During this time, LGBTQ visibility rose both in the U.S. and abroad. The United States saw its first openly gay politician as Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin was elected to the Senate in 2012, or at least first openly gay member of the Senate. And the Olympic Games held in Rio de Janeiro in the summer of 2016 included a record number of out LGBTQ athletes. Yet, despite this increase in visibility and acceptance, or maybe because of it, backlash against the LGBTQ community globally has intensified at the same time, pushing individuals on the gender or sexuality spectrum to hide, suppress, or flee to escape persecution. According to a Human Rights Watch analysis, 67 countries still outlaw homosexuality, with roughly 7 making same-sex conduct punishable by death. Most recently, maybe you saw this in the news this week, Uganda's parliament overwhelmingly passed a bill that criminalizes not just same-sex conduct, but also merely existing as a gay or lesbian person. If codified into law, homosexuals in Uganda could face life in prison literally for simply existing. We're going to talk about this now and open the phones with a deeper exploration of this anti-LGBTQ context for the bill in Uganda with Nila Ghoshal, Senior Director of Law and Policy at the group Outright International, and Richard Lusimbo, LGBTQI+, and human rights activist, National Coordinator for Uganda Key Population Consortium. Nila and Richard, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Brian, and thanks for having us.
And listeners, here's where you can come in. This news had us thinking about how perilous it can be to travel while being gay or trans in particular these days. We're also thinking of those who may have left your home country that has laws that persecute you on the basis of your gender identity or your sexual orientation, and you want to call in and tell a story of your country of origin, not to say everything's perfect here, but what about your country of origin if it was Uganda or anywhere else? 212-433-WNYC. If you're a member of the LGBTQ community, how much do you consider a country's laws or general attitudes toward your community before you even travel there? If you're from another country, what are attitudes toward the LGBTQ community and toward individuals like back at home? Is it more hostile than in the United States, or is it more hostile here? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Nila, can you start us off by explaining what's in this anti-LGBTQ bill in Uganda and what path it took to becoming a codified law.
Yes, thank you so much, Brian. So I want to offer one quick correction, which is that the bill seems to have been modified in Parliament to remove the clause that simply being an LGBTQ person is cause for imprisonment. So that was in an earlier draft of the bill and seems to have been removed. However,
that does not
in any great measure detract from the odiousness of this law. The UN human rights chief described this law as probably the worst anti-LGBTQ law in the world, and Outright International, where I work, which has worked on international LGBTQ human rights for 30 years, would concur with that. This law includes the death penalty for consensual same-sex conduct if someone is a serial offender. So if you're convicted more than once of having sex with your partner, you are subject to the death penalty. It also reinforces
I can't even believe, I know I read that in an article, but you're saying it out loud. I can't even believe what I'm hearing.
It is absolutely astonishing. At a time when the rest of the world is moving in the direction of decriminalization of same-sex conduct, the idea that 300-something Ugandan legislators sat together in a room and agreed that people should be put to death for having consensual sex with their partner is appalling and astonishing. And it goes far beyond that. This bill would criminalize anyone who engages in the so-called promotion of homosexuality with a prison sentence of up to 20 years. And that includes facilitating activities that encourage the normalization of homosexuality. Now, I did a little bit of research into
We have that here, don't we? With Ron DeSantis and others trying to, you know, characterize drag story hours and things like that as recruiting and trying to get them banned?
We certainly do, and we have a lot of problems here in the United States, and I don't want to minimize them, but we're talking about prison sentences of 20 years for anyone who conducts an activity or operates an organization that encourages the normalization of homosexuality. Now, let's just stop for a second and think about what that means. Any organization or company in Uganda that has a policy on its books saying that non-discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity should be the norm is now subject to a 20-year prison sentence. So we are talking
about
the United
Nations. Right? That would be you.
Well, that would certainly be us at Outrage International, but it doesn't stop with us, right? That would be the UN. That would be USAID and other development agencies. That would be the World Bank, major humanitarian organizations, as well as private sector companies. And I think the Ugandan government probably hasn't thought this through, but companies operating in Uganda like Citibank or Marriott or Coca-Cola have non-discrimination policies on the books, and they are now liable to 20 years in prison for operating an organization that normalizes homosexuality. And one more really horrific element, and I know that Richard probably has more to add to this, but one more really horrific element is the duty to report. So if somebody knows that another person is gay or bi or involved in same-sex conduct, they are required to report them. And if not, they face a prison sentence under the law, which means that mothers are required to report their children. Doctors are required to report their patients. Therapists and teachers need to report their clients and their pupils. So Uganda has essentially criminalized large swaths of the population, not just LGBTQ people.
Richard Lusimbo, again, to reset you. You are national coordinator for Uganda Key Population Consortium. Is that the name of the group?
Yes, please.
And could you just describe your connection to Uganda for our listeners for context?
Thank you so much, Brian, and thanks, Nila. Really nice to hear you speak on the issues happening in Uganda. I'm the national coordinator for Uganda Key Population Consortium, and I'm based here in Kampala, in Uganda. And my organization focuses on advocacy, but also on public health and access to health for the LGBTQ community and other sexual minority groups in the country. We are a national network that brings together sexual minorities in the country and other vulnerable groups.
And you're in Uganda right now, is that correct?
Yes, please.
So according to what Nila was just describing, you would be subject to arrest even for what you just said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the most ridiculous thing that I have ever had in a law, ever.
So are they coming to get you, or can you actually function?
The dynamics will be really very difficult and different if the president assents to this bill, which is now an act of parliament. But also, I think as a community, we'll try as much as possible to fight back using all the legal means given to us by the constitution that this doesn't become law. But if it remains as law, it will be really very, very terrible and tough for communities and organizations like mine to operate.
So, to be clear, this was passed by the Ugandan parliament, but not yet signed by the president, so it still hangs in the balance whether this will be law?
Absolutely.
How has the LGBTQ community in Uganda responded to the Parliament passing this?
It's been by shock and dismay, but also a lot of fear has gutted the community, because we have already seen an increase in cases of human rights violations that are targeting the LGBT community, people being thrown out of homes, people being attacked. And we have also seen a high increase in number of LGBTQ leaders who have been summoned by the police. And so it's a feeling of fear and uncertainty that now gets to besiege the LGBT community in Uganda right now.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Ed in Chelsea. Ed, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, I have a question for both your guests. How much responsibility does the evangelist Christian church missionaries have for pushing this agenda in Uganda?
Richard, would you take that first? Were you able to hear the question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you so much for your question. And I really like the fact that I get to hear this. The American evangelical extremists have really been the leaders in pushing for this and LGBT laws. And I also must say that in 2012, we were able to actually, I used to work at Sexual Minorities Uganda, the LGBT network. We were able to sue Scott Lively, who is from Springfield, Massachusetts, and he was responsible for the very first anti-LGBT law that was tabled in Uganda and nullified in 2014. But quickly also to speak about the role of what they've done is they have been systematically coming and engaging our leaders and sowing seeds of hatred, but also redefining who an LGBT person is and shaping the whole story of saying LGBT people aren't family, they're after children, and they are here to end the world. And this has really created a lot of this anti-LGBT sentiments, which actually have been well-funded and supported by the same groups. So they really have had a very big role in Uganda. And we have seen this going into other African countries. They're not only stopping in Uganda, but we're seeing the same in Ghana. We're seeing the same in Kenya now, in Burundi. And actually, they support the drafting of all these, the Quirinian laws and texts. Thank you.
And according to the Washington Post, U.S.-based Christian evangelical groups have invested millions of dollars in building orphanages and schools and spreading their ideology throughout Uganda, with what the Post calls more than 20 American religious organizations advocating against LGBTQ rights, safe abortion, access to contraceptives, and comprehensive sex education, and that they had spent at least $54 million furthering their agendas in Africa since 2007. Nila, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I can just add to that. I mean, what Richard says is absolutely correct in terms of the depth of this influence and the fact that it dates back more than a decade at this point. I would add that another connection has been through the National Prayer Breakfast in the United States, where the family, which up until this year ran the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, developed really deep ties and helped launch a National Prayer Breakfast in Uganda, which is a deeply homophobic gathering that takes place in Uganda every year. So those ties are deep and enduring. And as Richard says, there is legislation like this popping up in other African countries. And we can see that in some cases, some of the language of these different pieces of legislation is very much the same. So, for instance, in Ghana right now, there's currently a pending anti-homosexuality bill as well that includes the provision that was just dropped from Uganda's bill on, quote unquote, holding out as a lesbian, gay, queer, or transgender person. There's a number of other provisions in which there seems to be kind of copy and paste articles in these laws. And that does raise a lot of questions about where the influence is on these bills. And so I think some of it is quite clear and some of it needs to continue to be tracked, given the impact that it is having on queer Africans' lives.
And there's another irony that I see here, Richard. The Ugandan president, Museveni, likened homosexuality to a form of social imperialism. And yet what you both were just describing with respect to the U.S.-based Christian evangelical groups sounds a lot like neocolonialism. Don't people in Africa react to Americans coming over and trying to spread their religious politics as a form of neocolonialism?
You know, Brian, this has been a well-calculated move. And this reminds us the very first time Africa and other parts of the world were colonized. And these evangelicals have not only come in terms of spreading Christianity, but they come in form of aid. They come to build schools, like you are saying. They come to build hospitals. And what they do with this is that they get buy-in from communities, that they start to believe them and trusting them. And it's through this trust that they have established with communities that they start to dictate their imperialism and also these policies. Because by the time you realize you've actually been growing within this missionary school, and all you have been told is that LGBTI people are terrible, and all that you know is what they have told you. And I think this is why we find ourselves on the fence, because this has been a very systematic way of actually brainwashing and changing minds over different people across Africa, and especially in Uganda, where they've made it ground zero for every gender and SRHR and LGBT sentiments to grow.
This is WNYC, FM, HD, and AM New York, WNJT, FM, 88.1 Trenton, WNJP, 88.5 Sussex, WNJY, 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO, 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio and live streaming at WNYC.org at a couple of minutes before 11 o'clock. Few more minutes on what just happened in Uganda. This week, Parliament passing a law that criminalizes consensual homosexual acts to the point of imprisonment, even life imprisonment, for some who would be considered repeat offenders at just having consensual sex with their lovers. They are waiting to see if the president of Uganda signs the bill, and we're talking about this and in global context with Neela Ghoshal, Senior Director of Law and Policy at the group Outright International, and Richard Lusimba, LGBTQ plus human rights activist, national coordinator in Uganda. He's in Uganda now for the group called Uganda Key Population Consortium. And let's take another phone call. Excuse me, here's McKenna in the Hudson Valley. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. First, I just want to send love to my African queer and trans siblings. You matter to us. And I just wanted to say that to start. I'm a middle-aged white trans man, so I don't have to handle the additional burden of race and racism. But I do want to say that anytime I'm thinking about traveling out of the U.S., I always research where I'm going to, you know, want to go to see how trans friendly it is, what hassles, if any, I might have to face getting into the country as soon as I get off the plane. So that includes, as a trans man, I take medication, testosterone injections once a week. So I always have to figure if I'm traveling with that medication, which in many countries, including the U.S., is considered a controlled substance. So I travel with a vial of testosterone and a needle and syringe. And so I also have to travel with a doctor's letter so that if I am stopped and questioned about that medication, I have some evidence of why it's needed. So that's one. But I also have to say this. Right now, even leaving the United States is a burden for many trans people, because at the TSA checkpoints, if you don't have all your documentation in order, which I do, and you don't look how some TSA agents think you should look, you're often stopped, searched again, needing to be questioned multiple times about who you are and about your travel documents, etc. also now coming back into the U.S. is becoming very, very difficult because of all the anti-trans legislation. So there's many states now in this country, as a trans white man, I don't feel comfortable going to. So I just hope anyone listening to this who is a true ally of queer and trans people in the U.S. and around the world, wake up. Wake up. There is a concerted effort to really dehumanize us and to really eradicate queer and trans people around the world. So it's serious. We have to think about where we can go, where we're going to be safe as soon as we leave our houses.
McKenna,
so I hope people really get that.
Thank you for putting such a clear and detailed individual face on this. I hope you call us again.
Yeah, but Brian, I want to say it's not just individual. All my queer and trans siblings around the world face this. So it's not one person's story.
Oh, no, I know. But,
yeah.
But you know, it gets very powerful. It gets brought home to a lot of people by hearing an individual like yourself tell your individual story. I certainly agree.
Yeah, 100. And one last thing.
Sure.
Queer and trans kids, keep going. Keep going. I made it to middle age. Keep going. There is a life. There are people that love you and care about you. So keep going.
Thank you, McKenna. Thank you very, very much. One more call in this segment. Patrick in Elizabeth, a U.S. citizen of Ugandan descent. He says, hi, Patrick. You're on WNYC.
Yes, hi, Brian. Thanks for letting me on. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So Museveni is basically using this as a political tool to stay in power. His staying power has been maintained by support from countries like the U.S. because of his contribution to Somalia and South Sudan. So they are the ones arming him. I'm not trying to denigrate the fact that the law is bad. Homosexuality is not new in Uganda, but he's using such crises just to stay in power. And because of the arming and funding that he gets from this country. That's my opinion. Thank you very much.
Why, Patrick, if he's using it to stay in power, would something so hateful even be popular among the people to help him stay in power?
Yeah, because, like I said, homosexuality is not new in Uganda, but he's using it as a divisive tool to make sure that he's on the... Because the truth is the practice is not popular culturally, but government has not been trying to, in the past, government has not tried to deal with such issues because these are individual issues. You cannot go house to house, you know, enforcing such a law. Things like the death penalty, it's on the books for things like murder, but I may be slightly wrong on this, but to my knowledge, I don't think anybody, even murderers who have been convicted of the death penalty, have actually been killed.
I understand.
So Patrick, they're using it as a threat to...
Yes, he's got a threat that he can't carry out, and he uses it to his political advantage. Richard Lucimbo, do you want to comment on that? And then we're out of time.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Brian, and thank you, Patrick, for your views. I also want to say that I just want to disagree with Patrick when he says that even if they use a death penalty, they'll not use it. I think one thing we shouldn't forget is having this law and just having it there, the community will be attacked because society has been weaponized against the LGBTQ community. I think what is best for the Ghana LGBT community is actually having no law that discriminates or criminalizes them. And I think that's when we can have a positive conversation and protection for my community.
Richard Lucimbo is the national coordinator for the group Uganda Key Population Consortium. Neela Ghoshal is senior director of law and policy at Outright International. Thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation, troubling as it is, and letting a lot more people know what's going on and about your work. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you
and
so
Richard,
much.
Please stay strong. We're with you.